Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who joins us by phone today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks to Rich McFadden for filling in for me all of last week. And we do have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. As you might imagine, a couple of them deal rather extensively with the Democratic presidential nominee. Jim, we begin with the good martini, and it's a good martini because Hillary Clinton revealed to Democratic donors, Democratic nominees have a habit of doing this, apparently, at a fundraiser in New York Friday, Hillary Clinton talking about the people that are supporting Donald Trump for president.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it.
She did go on to say that the other half are people who feel disaffected, ignored, let down by the government and the economy and so forth. And Jim, you and I would be probably the first to agree that a certain segment of Trump's supporters feel comfortable with him and they might carry some of those descriptions. But to say half of the people planning to vote for the Republican nominee, you're looking at 25, 30 million people that she just branded racist, sexist, and Islamophobes out there.
Yeah, and it was worth noting that like, the following day, she came out and said, well, I shouldn't have said half. Okay. look, here's the thing. This is particularly unwise politics on her part, and it has been an opportunity the Trump campaign's been pretty eager to jump on. It's one thing for you or I to criticize Trump voters. If you want to say there's not a single deplorable person in the ranks of Trump fans, I think you have a hard time making that case. On the other hand, to make a blanket description of half of them, of all being these irredeemable, I think was really interesting. It basically says, we're not going to try persuading these people. We're not going to try arguing with these people. There's no point. It'd be pearls before swine. They're beneath even attempting to make the argument with. That's a very good encapsulation of the way the left has seen quite a few folks. Guy Benson and Mary Catherine Hamm wrote their book, End of Discussion. They don't really want to have the argument. They think these things are self-evident, and it's almost silly and ridiculous to think that these great unwashed masses can even understand the great brilliance they have to offer. Very arrogant comments. I don't know if it'll be a huge decisive one. It does feel give a whiff of the 47% comment from Mitt Romney. And, you know, I'm glad she came out and gave you that apology. I think you should always be mocking your opponent. You should not necessarily be mocking your opponent's supporters. If she can't grasp that but after this much time in politics, I don't think she ever will.
Just to clarify here, Jim, some might say that, well, it's a fundraiser. It's a red meat crowd. Maybe there's some exaggeration or hyperbole. She wants to make the most unappealing sector of the Trump supporters into a bigger issue than they really are. Or is it really a matter of the Democrats, just like with Obama's bitter clinger comments back in 2008, this is really how they see the bulk of the American people?
Occam's razor would suggest this is what they really think. I'm sure that, you know, you've seen the ads from Hillary Clinton that spotlight Republicans who say they can't vote for Trump. And I'm sure there's kind of a not too subtle subtext of the, you know, the Hillary campaign thinks they can win a decent number of Republican voters by saying, hey, you don't want to be like them, right? You're not like them. You're a decent human being. You're not deplorable. Kind of guilt people almost. But yeah, you know, here's the thing. I think that makes a pretty strong case against the Trump supporters. There's not too hard to find folks online who are utterly repugnant, racist, etc. I think the bigger question is, does this make you want to vote for Hillary? And I don't think this necessarily does. And I don't think it makes anybody who wasn't already inclined to vote for Hillary want to vote for her.
Yes, you're deplorable. Now join me.
You have to vote for me to show that you're not deplorable.
Right.
That's the only way to prove it.
That's right. Speaking of Hillary, she spent, a smaller portion of time than she was planning to at a 9/11 memorial service on Sunday, which, of course, was the 15th anniversary of the horrific 9/11 attacks. During the ceremony, she left unexpectedly, wasn't feeling well, according to a source as reported to Fox News' Rick Leventhal. And the story obviously took on much greater significance and chatter once there was video of Hillary waiting for her vehicle to pick her up. She was leaning against a post with an aide hanging on to her. She then seemed to be staggering and unable to walk the few steps to the car and then seemed to even sink or collapse as she got close to the vehicle. And so, Jim, on the one hand, you've got a lot of people saying, I told you so today about Hillary's health. We don't know exactly what's going on, but we do know that the Clinton campaign lied multiple times about this. First, it was allergies. Then it was overheated. Then she was fine. Then she has pneumonia as of 2 days earlier that they felt the media and the public didn't have a right to know about. And so on the one hand, her health appears to be a bigger issue than a lot of folks seemed to think a few days ago. And at the same time, the campaign is once again spinning.
By November, I would suspect, Greg, we're going to know whether this is, all right, she really did just happen to have pneumonia and she's been trying to work her way through it and it caught up with her. I'm actually up in New York today and I was there yesterday and it was warm, but it was not, you know, people were not bursting into flame. It was about 79, 80. There was some humidity, but not, you didn't see anybody else fainting at the 9/11 event, at least that I heard of. It was not something common. Certainly no indication of allergies or anything like that. This is something unique to her. The video is, let's face it, really disturbing. She's got somebody beside her. She seems to be leaning one side. The weird thing is how much it does, for somebody who apparently is just dehydrated and has pneumonia, boy, those limbs don't seem to work. And she's got three people around her, and she still manages to just kind of go down like a stone when she's stepping off the curb. It, you know, if this, as somebody put it on Twitter earlier yesterday, if this was your grandmother, you'd rush her to the hospital. This, you know, whatever it was, it looked very serious. Now, about later in the morning, around the middle of the day, she comes out of Chelsea's apartment, and she seems fine. They said she's, you know, going to take 2 days off the trail, and hopefully she makes a full recovery. Mike, one of two things are going to happen, Greg. Either she's going to be fine from here on out, and she'll do interviews, and everyone will be able to see, okay, she, you know, seems to be fine. She just was in a bad day for her. Or we're going to see something else. And if we see something else like yesterday, I think her campaign is in serious trouble, and you will suddenly see a lot of Democrats talking about, do we replace her with Kane? Do we replace her with Biden or something like that? It was a conversation we weren't having 48 hours ago. And I think it's a giant X factor thrown into the this year's campaign.
Yeah, it is. And there are a couple stories last week that made yesterday's events even more significant. First, there was, of course, the coughing fit on Labor Day, but there was also the FBI revelations that she can't remember some of the things about her classified information training and so forth at the State Department as a result of the concussion she suffered. So Trump says now he's going to put out his medical records. We'll see if Hillary follows suit, but it's definitely dominating the political coverage today. But Jim, we have a crazy martini for the ages today, and for that, we go to North Korea. You and Rich talked on Friday about North Korea's apparently successful nuclear test. Obviously very disturbing. They're actually getting a little more competent in their ballistic missile technology, so their range with nuclear weapons is expanding. But here's a story that is especially disturbing to the three martini lunch, because if we ever do a world tour, I'm guessing North Korea is going to have to be scratched off the list. This is a true story, and it's from the UK Telegraph. North Korea's Kim Jong-un has banned sarcasm. He has banned sarcasm because he fears people only agree with him ironically, according to reports. Government officials were apparently warned they will, quote, not be forgiven if they are heard being sarcastic. Mass meetings were organized across the country to spread the word about the new order. The main point of the lecture was to keep your mouth shut. One of the banned phrases is, "This is all America's fault," alluding to Mr. Kim's default position of blaming the U.S. for everything that goes wrong. Mr. Kim is apparently also referred to as a fool who cannot see the outside world by government workers who could not understand why he did not attend commemorations in Russia and China to mark the anniversary of the end of the Second World War. So, Jim, I'm guessing if sarcasm is banned, the three martini lunch would last about 5 or 10 seconds in North Korea. But this is funny on one side, but also very disturbing that they would do this. And in some ways, actually encouraging that, even though in a very repressive country, the people still kind of see what's going on there.
In response, every other world government said, yeah, that's a great idea. A three martini lunch without sarcasm. What does it sound like when you and I just stare at each other and just try to come up with something and to not mean, not to say the opposite of what we genuinely think and to genuinely say, it's like, this would be you and I saying, Greg, this is a bad policy. No government should be this oppressive, and it's unfortunate this is a, you know, like, how would we even begin to do that? So I will meet them halfway, though, in that I think it is long past time that Twitter came up with some sort of symbol or hashtag to indicate that what the person is saying is sarcasm. Because you'll say, you know, I will say Hillary Clinton was perfectly fine health, and like a million people will respond, how can you possibly say that, Jim? Didn't you watch the video? Yada, yada, yada. So clearly the North Koreans have gone a little too far, but the inability to determine when someone is being sarcastic, or how many relationship fights have started over texts that are sarcastic and were not taken that way, or jokes that are not understood without the facial expression and inflection and things like that. So we need some sort of like universal sound or symbol for sarcasm. And if North Korea's universal rule here does lead to this, then undoubtedly they should be getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Do you have any nominations for what the sarcasm symbol should be?
Maybe something between the at sign and the pound, and maybe a percentage or something. I don't know. Just kind of like with the symbol for Prince from a few years ago. Just take the top of your keyboard and just have lots of lines sticking out of it. So everything above your numbers on the keyboard, just smash it together.
All right, Jim, have a great time in New York. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.